Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
An SEC program has decided to be the Joneses. And there's actually an even better way. Chuck Oliver Show on a Friday, and it's a glorious Friday. We have five SEC spring games. We got spring games everywhere tomorrow. There are some folks that, I don't know, man, like NC State. I think NC State, like, for them to say, look, we got ambushed by this Final Four thing, yeah, that's fine. NCAA was like, hey, remember that spring portal window, May 1st through the 5th? Yeah, we're just moving that up 2 weeks. What have I told you about Kirby? That Kirby, every answer to any hypothetical question you can come up with, Kirby is a hot dog, a sandwich. Anything you can ask Kirby, Kirby, do you want the Georgia-Florida game in Jacksonville? Always assume that Kirby's answer is going to be based around what's better for Georgia recruiting. Well, the portal, that's even better than recruiting because those are college players, not high school players. So the portal, it's now more important than high school recruiting. It really is in some ways. It really is. So when the portal moved its date, you needed to move your date. Some schools didn't, which means we still got a smattering of games. There's even a couple of games in May. So you get to choose your schedule, and some schools have, but we got a lot on the docket. We're going to talk spring games. We got, what, Texas A&M tomorrow. We got Mississippi State. We got all kinds of stuff. So we will get into that throughout the 2 hours. But I said an SEC program, I was going to say, has decided to be the Jeffersons. Too old of a reference. Moving on up.
I think people still know that one.
They should.
One of the best TV theme songs of ever, so it helps.
Plus, you're living out in, like, where was that? Staten Island next to the bunkers?
Queens,
but then you moved to, like, downtown Manhattan? Like, that's not nothing. They moved on up. All right, they're the Jeffersons or the Joneses. There's a phrase, keeping up with the Joneses, response, we are the Joneses. We are who others keep up with. And for the Missouri Tigers, I'll say athletic department, but specifically the football program, they've gone public. We're the Joneses. Or at least we hang out with enough of the Joneses that we're going to do what they do. And Missouri has announced, I'm going to say, the latest improvements to Memorial Stadium, Faro Field at Memorial Stadium, where the Tigers play football and have since 1926. Keep that in mind. University of Missouri has announced $250 million of additional improvements, renovations, additions, etc. to the football stadium complex. Now, the reason I'm saying it like that is because they had just spent, I think, $90 million about 5 years ago. I remember my good buddy Tom Hart. Hey, get Tom Hart on. My good friend Tom Hart was doing a game at Missouri, and it was the first one where they had the wrecking ball in the end zone, and they were like we're going to get real in the end zone. And so sent Cole Kublik down there, and, of course, he always had to do stuff around the scaffolding because, you know, Cole will do it. So this was a project that if you have the SEC network, which I don't know how you don't, it's like $20 a year or something, or it used to be. Don't quote me on that. So they just spent like $90 million. And when I say just, I'm going to say like 5 years ago. Well, this $250 million of additional renovations, we're a few months away from the 24 season starting, okay? This $250 million, it will have already been spent and executed on the stadium before they kick off week one of 26. And if you don't, it's, you don't know anything about this project. I just told you about it. You tell me what Missouri has decided to do. All right, well, there's probably going to close in one end zone. They do that thing with the white rocks to make an M, and that's important to them. In the other end zone, they're going to completely enclose it, I think, is what they're doing. And they're also taking out, they've got like a ground level sort of booster donor area, and that's coming out, and that's going to be, I think, a recruiting place. And all those folks who had like field level access at that point, the end zone is going to be Suite Central. And I mean Suite, S-U-I-T, and I also mean Suite. So yeah, that's they're dumped $250 million into a place you just dumped $100 million into. It's going to be nice. And you have to say it that way. You really do. So when I say that there's, they're the Joneses, they're the Jeffersons, there's actually an even better way. When you now are saying, like, snap your fingers and it's week one of 26, like, this is not a Vanderbilt, my gosh, they're the smartest people in the SEC, aren't they? And Nashville, the whole city's under construction. You can just borrow workers, can't you? Hey, you're off on Thursday, we could use you. They can't get it done, and they're not even expanding. It's not like it's a 90,000-seat stadium there. I'm flummoxed. But if you look at Mizzou, they're saying, yeah, we're starting yesterday. Because you know what? Missouri football, the big difference is it matters to them when they get this done, because the sooner it gets done, the nicer it is and the more perfect it is, and all, the sooner they start making fat stacks off of it. So 350 over the course of about 8 years, that's not nothing. And like I said, there are places all over college athletics. You walk in and you're like, dang. I mentioned Little John. Little John, I went to my first game in Little John, folks, back in the 70s. Tree Rollins was there. And I was a little bitty kid. And if you would have gone back 10, 12, 15 years later, kind of looked like that. They put a lot of money into it. McCamish Pavilion, it used to be Alexander Memorial. It used to be the Thriller Dome in downtown Atlanta for Georgia Tech. They put a lot of money into that. Do you know what Little John is? You know what McCamish Pavilion is? Kind of look around, you're like, wow, that's pretty nice. They did a good job. Making a clearly older building much nicer than it used to be. Auburn, I give my school credit. I mentioned this. That beer, was it Beard Eves Memorial Coliseum? It was an ashtray. It was awful. The last game I went there strictly out of duty because they said, I think it was an NIT game maybe? I'm dreaming an NIT game against somebody like Baylor maybe, but maybe I made that up, and I think there was a regular season game against Mississippi State. Sit down, look next to me, the seat's broken. It's way, 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 way past its time. You know what Auburn didn't do? Throw like $80 million into it. Instead, now, I don't know what they do. Was they got health education classes there, and I don't know, maybe they have intramurals, perhaps. They put it into a new arena. And the reason I say that there's actually an even better way, it's not just, hey, Chuck, come on, going from a basketball arena to like an old one to a new one. Ole Miss did that as well. That's different than a football stadium. It always has been different. And I say this about the five-man pitching rotation in Major League Baseball. It's the best way to do it until someone decides it's not. Because that's what you said about the four-man rotation. That's what you said about the two-man rotation and how old Hoss Radburn would wind up with like 70 complete games. It was that way until it wasn't. God bless Auburn. You know what? Let's do something different. Let's open an NBA crib with about, what do they got, like 9,000 seats? Let's open up something that nice on this level, and it'll be awesome. a lot awesomer than putting that money into the... So that's what they did. For Missouri, this would have been an outlandish statement even 10, 12, 15 years ago. The flex is commit your future dollars as a member of the Big Ten or SEC, and that is your category. Do you play college football? Yes. Are you in the Big Ten SEC, or are you in those other conferences? Oh, we're in the Big Ten SEC. All right. Are you in the AFC or the NFC? Or in the NFC, the Southeastern Conference? The Big Ten, they're more like the eight because they wear like the logo on the jersey. The flex as a member of the good group to be in, commit your future dollars to a totally new crib and on an SEC level. Some have, and it works. When I say that, on the SEC level, I did the second game ever at UCF's new place. It was called Bright House Network Stadium. Then it became the Bounce House, and maybe that is it still the Bounce House? Whatever it is, it's on campus, and you know what it is? It's a pretty nice stadium. Built it for like $50 million. BYU, UAB, you know what UAB has? Like a really nice stadium at that configuration and attendance. San Diego State, have y'all looked at the stadium? Folks, this is in California with those construction costs. Look at the money San Diego State spent on, I think it's, is it Snapdragon Stadium? Go look at the crib they put together and for the money they spent. And you think about, well, if they spent $350 million, Missouri spent $350 million. And even at the, I say, well, what about the level of the SEC, Chuck? That would be really unusual. I don't know. Northwestern, not a candidate to build a 90,000-seat stadium. Like ever, if they play football for 100 million years in Evanston, they'll never need to expand to that level. They're going to open their new Ryan Field on some of the most expensive real estate in that state, I promise you. It's like right along the water, isn't it, where they're building the new joint? And it's going to be nice. Go back to that word. Like Northwestern said, we're not necessarily going to be great. We don't know that, but let's invest in this. So Vanderbilt's redoing everything the best they can, and it looks like a war zone around their stadium. Northwestern says, wait a minute, Vanderbilt's in the same group we're in, the Big Ten SEC. You know, the other group, not Big Ten SEC. Yeah, they can't do this stuff. Since we're in that group, Vanderbilt, what are y'all doing? Vanderbilt's like, what? We thought that this was a big deal. Well, it is for you. South Florida, new crib. That whole thing about we play in an NFL facility. Yeah, tell the Pitt Panthers how much that helps recruiting. You know, good for them that you only have to cover up half of the Steelers stuff, the black in the black and gold. Throw some, like, blue over it, and you can kind of roll with it. Playing in the NFL stadium sucks. It just does. Playing at the Citrus Bowl, it sucked. Like, Miami made it work at the Orange Bowl, the OB. But otherwise, it sucks. Which is why Minnesota finally said, you know what? New stadium. If you look at the money that Doak Campbell put into there, Folsom Field out of Colorado, they're doing it. Colorado's spending on something other than like keeping the lights on. And they didn't have much of a history of doing that. Texas Tech, I mentioned Vanderbilt. Jacksonville State says, yeah, us too. A lot of programs are still doing it the old way. It's not revolutionary or provocative. There is a new way. And multiple, like I said, Minnesota has a brand new, it's really our stadium, brand new construction. And that's in Power Five. And it's also recognizing that we're in the Big Ten SEC. So there is another way to do this. Missouri, though, it's a giant step forward. Think of everything you can do to a stadium you just put. Now, most of that was that end zone thing and you know, getting up to snuff. They had spent about $75 million back when they joined the conference in 12. So now over the course of about, what, 15 years, you're up to about $450 million. So that's what you, and you still have a stadium that is 98 years old. The truth is, almost every stadium, I love my home field. I do love my stadium and my field the same way you do. Do you know what almost every last one of them is? A giant piece of rain-stained concrete. If you look at the outside, and if your team has, like my team, you know what they did? They built one of those nice big, like, brick facades on the outside. Like that, Doak Campbell? Did you ever see the Erector set down in Tallahassee? Folks, Heath, you went to a game there, I'm sure, in the Erector set.
Oh, yeah, no, it's an amazing job of making what was a completely uninspiring building look fantastic from the outside.
And from the outside, you know what it really is, though? It's a bunch of girders and bolts, and I know that because I've seen them. That's what these stadiums are, and I love it, and I don't want to, you know, anything else. Don't wish I would have gone somewhere with a new stadium, but it's rain-stained concrete. It just is. Every stadium, you look at the upper reaches from the outside on the outside of the upper deck, and you've got that little rain triangle comes down. That's just what it is. You can only do so much with that. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, jump into it next.
Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
I am redeemed. Although someone else would probably just call me basic. I think actually I'm entry level, but I feel a little bit redeemed. Chuck Oliver Show continuing on this Friday. Buddy of mine who he donates money to his school that he graduated from. And that's the University of Georgia. I donate money to the school I graduated from. And I give, I've said before, a very opulent gift, $250 a year. I have been called cheap. A former AD, Jay Jacobs, came on our air and said part of the reason he'd come to Atlanta was specifically to get Chuck to open his wallet more. That wasn't true. He was here for a Clemson game. But he decided, you know, let's hit Chuck up on the radio. It's what it is. It's the alumni dues. It's whatever. You give your money and you do whatever you do. UGA has a new approach to name, image, likeness. It's called the 21 Club. In honor of Frank Sinkwich, who wore jersey number 21, Dominic Wilkins, who wore jersey number 21, and the 2021 National Championship. UGA's new approach to name, image, likeness is an email it has sent directly from the university to its donor base. Announcing the 21 Club, $21 per month over the year, or how much? About $250 a year. Nothing cheap about that. But understand what this is. Go back to the first part. It's a direct appeal from the university to all donors, yes. Asking they give to someone else, another organization. I'm reading the letter. It's right in front of me. To an organization that is legal, registered with the state and the internal RS, and as public as it can possibly invent ways to be public in any positive way, not the Gators collective way of being public. That's bad publicity. In love publicity of any positive nature. Hey, look at all the money they're handing out to kids in Athens. Oh, we love that conversation. Do you know what Kirby would have said 3 years ago? Hush up, you. Hugh Freeze got himself fired by saying, hush up, you. I heard they paid a kid's light bill. Shh. If you besmirch our program, here's compliance at Ole Miss. Folks, the university just contacted their donor and alumni base and ticket buying base and said, hey, give your money to these other people so they can pay players. That used to be called bagmen. Now it's the university sending out constant contact. Send. And by the way, the money, again, to the collective is not to the university. It's from the people who have given to the university all these years And now the university itself is saying, we got to swing all the way the other way. We got to encourage folks to give to the Name, Image, Likeness Collective. And the money to the university and the athletic department has to come from somewhere. And most athletic departments can't really tell you where right now. But the product on the field, I don't know. Like, if I got a letter from Auburn saying, hey, give $250 a year to our collective, and I will give my, again, I mean this seriously, we work that Bo Jackson angle. We have the 34 club. So whatever you can do to wring out the value of whatever. And so what does that equal? Like 400 and something a year? If I got a letter from the university itself saying, start giving money to the collective, you know what I might do? Stop giving money to them and give it to the collective.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ways that people are choosing to do this. It's interesting, too, Chuck, because, again, we've talked about this idea that some programs are concerned that the boat's going to leave and they're not going to be on it, so you're doing whatever you can to get to that place. Memphis, what do you always hear about Memphis?
Oh, I remember the AD about 15 years ago swore they were an SEC program.
The thing you always hear about Memphis is they've got that FedEx money. FedEx is, well, Fred Smith and FedEx will drop the money where they need the money dropped. This morning, FedEx announcing a program for the University of Memphis, $5 million a year for them, for NIL. Not for a building, not for coaches' salaries, not for a new fancy locker room or fixing the showers at the Liberty Bowl.
Didn't Tommy West say he couldn't get carpet?
Yep. $5 million per year, NIL, for Memphis. Not all for football, for basketball, for some women's sports, but FedEx by themselves is saying $5 million a year, go nuts, because they're trying to make sure if the boat leaves that they've done everything they can to be on the right side of the line.
I'm going to tell you, for that level of money, $5 million for the level that Memphis competes at, especially in that backyard, you can stock a roster. When you're talking about that last year, my understanding was Texas was in the $13 million range, and you're not trying to beat Texas. Texas is trying to first win the SEC, and if not that, get into the playoffs and win the national championship. Money matters. And like I said, it's not a bagman anymore. Bagman was $50 walking across the parking lot after a game. Bagman was $350 after a win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Chuck Oliver Show on a Friday. And there's a big difference between a practice and a scrimmage. Practice is kind of boring. Practice is like this air horn goes off and you look up and somebody flips over a number and that was period 12 and now it's period 13. And then like 6.5 minutes later, the air horn goes off again and you look up and you go, okay, now it's period 14. It's boring. Scrimmages can be fun. Then there's an actual game and you're like, all right, this is what all this work is for. I think the Florida State spring session, they call it a showcase, it's kind of in the middle ground there. There's going to be some situational. This is not going to be Garnet team, Gold team, and we divide it up and somebody gets red behind, somebody gets beans and franks. You can still find some stuff out, even with like a quarterback and a half kind of available for the game. It's going to be, like I said, protect the QB and then make some fans happy and move on to the offseason. I want to welcome on right now from Knowles 247. It is Chris Knee. Chris, welcome back. How you been?
I'm good, Chuck. How about you?
Nothing but blessed. Talk about the middle ground there. They call it the spring showcase there. It's not a spring game. Is it more of a scrimmage-ish sort of, all right, goal line or things like that? They're not going to actually divide up and try to keep score and play a game, are they?
Yeah, it's kind of half and half. So the first half's kind of like a practice. They'll do situational stuff. They'll probably do some teams, some even 7-on-7, 11-on-11, mixing it up in different ways. And then later on, they'll have some of the guys from the 1999 championship team here come back, guys like Peter Ward, Tommy Pauly, a couple others. And they're going to help coach. They're going to be guest coaches. And that part will be a little bit more entertainment, probably a little bit more throw it down the field, maybe a trick play or two type of stuff, and a little more feel like a game. And that's the entertainment part of it. But, yeah, if a fan's rolling into the currently half-built Doak Campbell Stadium to watch a spring game, they're going to be disappointed because that's not what it's been under Mike Norvell.
No, you're right about that. This is now, what, his third or fourth spring game as well. So let's talk fifth. Wow. Let's talk DJU. Yeah. He and there's one other option, but Mike Norvell has announced it's spring. It's the 15th session. We got two kids that are a little injured, and that's enough to keep them out. So what do you think we'll be able to see from DJU? Sort of a showcase for him, won't it be?
I think the thing that people will come out of the stadium buzzing about with DJU is just the arm strength. It's pretty unbelievable to watch in person. It comes with great ease, his ability to throw the ball 40 to 60 yards down the field. And he can do it quite often. FSU's kind of built to be that kind of team with the speed they added at receiver and running back with guys like Jalen Lucas at running back and Malik Benson at wide receiver, and there's a few others. They are a vertical stretch team, and that plays to DJU's strengths, his ability to throw deep and throw it big. He also just stands out. I mean, physically speaking, he's a huge dude. I've been around a lot of quarterbacks in the job over the years, and the only other guy I can think of who the first time I met him, I went, man, that's a huge human, was probably Cam Newton, who looked like a defensive end. So there is sort of that, like, you know he's big because you see him listed at 6'4", 255, but when you see him, you're like, man, that looks like a defensive end.
Brock Glenn, who he's not the story, it's DJU. He got dropped into a wood chipper, man, and he was 1-1 with a conference title. So,
yeah.
Like, where is he mentally right now? Like, everybody understands, and he does as well. He can exhale now, right?
Yeah, he got thrown in the fire, and there were ups and downs. He was very inconsistent in game situations, but he's the kind of kid that I think it was good for him. Like, I think he's built to handle that. I don't think it's one of those things where it will make him crumble or make him small. I think he will learn and grow from it. He was good in the spring. He got banged up here about a week ago, so he's missed the back half for the most part. But early on, he was good. I think DJU is the starter. They haven't named a starter here, but I think everybody's kind of working with the belief that is DJU. But Brock is a young man who I think, given time and seasoning, is going to be just fine. A little bit of a gunslinger. Personality's great because he's serious enough as a quarterback, but he's not so serious that, like, he dooms himself. He very much takes it in stride and just tries to get better, and he likes coaching. He takes the coaching pretty well, which is good around these parts.
Chuck Oliver Show, talking with Chris Knee, Knowles 247. What Florida State's going to do tomorrow, they'll do about 4 o'clock, and it'll be on the ACC Network. All right, let's talk running backs. Lawrence Toafili. You talk about up and down the depth chart, waiting turns, et cetera. Talk depth chart here.
I mean, I think Toafili is your top man there. He's been here. He's done a bunch. He was kind of a gadget player early in his career. He's become a more well-rounded running back as he's developed. He's continually improved. He's also a kid that's very comfortable being a leader. And that room's always going to be about the group instead of individuals. The other guys in that room to really know, Roydell Williams, the Alabama transfer, 5'10", 2 1/4", a little bit more of a battering ram. Been really good in spring. They like him a lot. He's a smart kid. He works really hard. Jalen Lucas, they list him at 5'9". I don't think he's 5'9". I'm 5'9", and I'm pretty sure Jalen's shorter than me. But, man, holy heck, like, he is a blast to watch. In the spring setting where it's more thud instead of tackle, he just makes so many electric plays. Hopefully it translates when it becomes more tackle. At Indiana, he was a great return man. I feel like FSU is going to lean into him as an offensive weapon a lot in addition to being a return man. But he's been a really electric guy throughout the spring. He's been very fun watching. Cam Davis, I don't expect him to go tomorrow, but he's a freshman that they're excited about. 221, very highly regarded recruit, was long-time commitment here. He's somebody else that needs to be known about in that room.
Throw a bone to Toa Fili in particular, because he does go back, you're right, to the weirdness of COVID, and then stayed, and particularly a running back. If it hasn't happened by sometimes, I don't know, spring of your early enrollee year, we see guys transfer out. What about Toa Fili in Tallahassee? Why did he stay? Because, like, the profile of that running back, that position today, he's out.
I think for him, it was a belief in Mike Norvell and what he'll do with a guy who has a little bit of a different skill set. I don't like to call him a gadget guy, but he is a gadget guy. They'll use him on wheel routes. You know, he hit a big one at Clemson a few years back, had a big run at Clemson last year, too. He's a guy that they will line up and now run with him between the tackles much more than I think they were willing to 3-4 years ago. I think he's a guy they kind of supplied a vision to, and he bought into it. And while he had to wait his turn behind a guy like Trey Benson, for example, I think he was willing to. I think that room has an David Yak Johnson, who coaches running back for him at Florida State, kind of preaches to those guys that it's about us. It's not about you, the individual. And I think LT embodies that. I think he's taken to that belief, and he's very comfortable. And I think even this year, knowing that there is a Roy Dell Williams and there is potential for another guy or two to get touches, he is still comfortable and happy in leading that room as a guy who understands when I get my opportunity, I got to capitalize versus they're going to feed me 20 or 25 times a game.
Would have been such a criticism just a few years ago, but the Florida State wide receiver room, stop in for a year or two, head off to the league. Well, that means there are some snaps available. Hakeem Williams was a kid that a year ago I was being told, my gosh, you got to see this kid. Boy, the potential. Well, now it's a year later, and he's a little bit more of a grown man. How his spring been?
It's still about potential for him. He's got to get more consistent. That room as a whole has kind of had an up-down spring in the sense of catching the ball consistently. Hiking's fun. When it's good, it's great, and you see the full capability of what his 6'2", 210, and athleticism can all do together. But it's just a matter of he's got to get more consistent. You know, kind of expected for a second-year guy. The greatest thing about Hiking now versus a year ago, he can be consistently – effort-wise, very good in practice. Last year, he was not in shape to handle that. This time, he's in much, much better shape these days. That room, to me, the conversation starts with Malik Benson, the Alabama transfer. He's 6'1", 190, track speed, excellent vertical guy. It's kind of mind-blowing that his stats were only what they were at Alabama. Watching him in the spring, it just feels like a guy that, you know, the production he basically had at Bama last year feels like something he's capable of doing in a game this year with a guy like DJU throwing it to him. But that room's got to find some answers in the sense of who really kind of creates the tier system for him. You know, I think they were hoping they have a decent amount of returning veteran guys, Kentron Portier, for example, Darion Williamson. I think they were hoping that some of those guys would become a little bit more established this spring than maybe we've seen them. I do think Ja'Kai Douglas, who, again, a little bit of a gadget player for them, kind of a slot type, he is a guy that they feel is super reliable. He has made a bunch of big plays in an FSU uniform, but they're looking for the other guys around him. Will it be somebody like a Jaylen Brown? Destin Hill got banged up here in the spring. He was someone they were excited about. He's currently unavailable. You know, a freshman like William Corey, who's from South Florida, came in this spring. He's been good, but again, he got a little banged up. So, like, it's one of those things where, like, every time you start seeing a guy kind of turning a corner and showing promise, they'll get banged up. That's just kind of how springs go.
All right, bounce across the line of scrimmage. Two kids I want to ask you about. One of them I've seen, and that's Patrick Payton. And I like that a lot. But talk about, on the other side, the potential, because I'm like everybody else. We see five stars coming out of high school, and maybe we even know the name a little bit. Marvin Jones Jr., my gosh, they told him in Athens last August, Marvin, take this job, and then he didn't take the job. But I still have a lot of faith because it looks so right. Tell me where Marvin Jones is right now, and also Patrick Payton coming back for another year.
On Marvin, he's ascended a great deal in the back half of the spring. He's been really, really good. He looks like what an FSU defensive end is supposed to be, which is a guy that barrels downhill, gets there, finishes plays, does a really, really good job. He's been outstanding. I think they feel very confident he will be the guy opposite of Patrick Payton on that D-line. They've brought in a decent amount of depth in that group, and they do like their depth, but they want those front two guys to set the tone. They don't have a Jared Verse, but they have two guys in that feel are better than a 1-2 combination from last year when it was Verse and Payton. I think they feel like Payton's taking the next step, and Marvin's basically as good or better than Payton was a year ago. I think that's kind of how they view it. On Patrick Payton, yeah, he's taking the next step. He's been really good. The buy-ins there, which is great to see. You know, there was some shenanigans after season and negotiation season in this new world order of college football. they've moved on from that. I think both parties learned from it. Peyton's been excellent, fully committed in the spring. The body looks great. He's about 255 these days, better than he's ever looked physically. And he's just been excellent. Day to day to day, he's been one of the best players for FSU on that practice field every time they step out there. And, yeah, he's a wrecking ball. Like, the thing I love about Pat, having watched him now for multiple seasons at FSU, the toolbox gets better every year. The moves, what he can lean into, what he's comfortable doing to create separation from offensive tackles or to wreak havoc at the line of scrimmage, he's gotten continually better at that, and that shows a great deal this spring.
Our tourist reporter for FSU, it's Chris Nee from Knowles 247. Appreciate your time, Chris. Thank you.
Take it easy, Chuck.
All right. Wrapping up again, Chris Nee with the spring game tomorrow, 4 o'clock, local, if you're around there. And it's, like I said, it's a great example of they're spending money right now updating that stadium. And it's marked. If you go back, now, I'm talking about going, you had to go back 25 years, 30 years, to looking at it as sort of an unattractive, it's just a functional place that surrounds a patch of grass. That's kind of what it was back in the day. But the exterior of it is what they really took care of. I'll give them, there is one distinctive feature if you've been inside Doak Campbell. And it's just kind of cool because very few stadiums are like this. What level are you in? What deck are you in? No, it's just one kind of level. It's just like row one and goes up to like row 70. So it's just kind of a really neat look as you're walking into the end zone. You kind of look off that one side. You're like, oh, it just kind of keeps going. So it's a wonderful place to attend a football game and watch. But walking up to the stadium, you're like, when do we get inside? This is kind of ugly. And then they did the brick face and the statues and all that other stuff. And the practice field and the baseball stadium is like right off to the other side. So it's all kind of right yonder together. All right, we break and we will wrap up our one next.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
I feel like it's in the best interest of our team for me to continue to call the plays, right? So if I didn't feel that way, I would have made a decision to make a change. So I'm excited about the input that we're getting from the staff and some of the things we've done to reorganize. But overall, you know, more focus on the things that matter.
Billy Napier, Florida head coach, ahead of their spring game. Did he say? Oh, no, they played last week. I'm sorry, they already played. I was like, no, there's only five this week. Did he say, I'm calling plays, and now I'm gonna worry about things that actually matter? Did he put calling plays in a category of things that are slightly irrelevant?
I think what he was trying to do there is basically say that by the reorganization, that's taken some things off his plate so he could focus more on the play calling.
Okay. I'm a little surprised by his response in almost every other way except I'm going to call plays, and on this list of like nine things that the Florida Bull Gator would complain about, I'm going to address, I'm going to respond, I'm going to come up with a new way or a change or something, whether it was my choice or the coach left and so I made a choice. I'm going to address all of this, except now I'm going to keep calling plays. I don't know if it was right or wrong. I know that Billy Napier is a good coach, but this is the biggest contradiction in the SEC, maybe one in college football right now, that going into last season, after 1 year on campus, going into last season, you really had an idea how this was going to unfold, that November of year three, he would probably get fired. You know how hard that is to be sitting at, I don't know, media days, thinking of a schedule and a team and returning talent for the 24 season. Billy Napier's coming back ahead of the 24 season. And I think I can forecast how this sort of has to go. Well, if you know it's going to fail, go ahead and make a change. You couldn't. Now, the detail that I was off about, and my goodness, everybody was, but Graham Mertz, he wasn't a dynamic guy that's going to vault his way to New York and pass you to a 11-win season. He was great. He was really great. And getting more field flipping, getting more aggressive and over the top and all that. That's sort of the idea for this year. But I'll say the spring game, now they were wearing black jerseys, so couldn't hit them, and that's a little different. When you know you're not going to get hit. Lagway made some plays, and I don't know if he's a player, and I don't know what was scripted. Like, I saw Jacob Eason on Kirby's first spring game, and it looked like they were throwing some stuff at the line of scrimmage and getting the kid like a feel-good experience. And so the last thing you want is him walking off the field. Houston Astros last week, one of their starting pitchers, a guy named Framber Valdez. Ooh, my arm. So they call this rookie and say, hey, get to Houston. You have to start for Framber. Win tonight. Oh. Faced 9 hitters. He got 1 of them out. And they're like, all right, you can come out now. You don't want that for a quarterback in the SEC. It can happen to a kid. And so a spring game, you want to kind of create something there. And I think there's a possibility. So if you're talking about a corner to fight out of a super accomplished and experienced veteran, like way upperclassman veteran, and then an early enrollee who I had started to hear, hey, level of competition, and in some of these all-star games, boy, did he look raw. What does Florida really have? And I didn't know if that was more of an accurate reflection or 5-star best kid since Tebow. I didn't know. After one spring, what everybody says about him is, what he says about Billy Napier, same thing Graham Mersch did. Quarterbacks are sold on Billy Napier. But I was kind of right about how last season was going to turn out. I was like, 6 wins is probably the blue sky. This year, if they get to 6, it better be early. I think this is more like a 5-win something. And even the layout of the schedule is a big challenge, and y'all know that, and you've looked at it, and you think the same thing. So this is not like I just gave you cold fusion, all right? This is like it's so 2+2 that a year ago we could say 18 months from now it really looks like this is how it will unfold, and there's nothing happening to make me think it'll turn any different. I think Florida's getting a new coach last week of November, first week of December.
The other part of the equation, too, Chuck, is, yeah, it's one thing to lose games. It's another thing if you lose games in ways that frustrate and embarrass people. And one of the things that can also frustrate and embarrass you is if your arch rival, who you care about a great deal, who has basically switched roles with you, you're the place with all the resources and all the talent that can't put it together, and they're winning national championships. And that's how it was supposed to be with you and them after Spurrier. It was never supposed to switch back to Georgia's got the gun and you're the rabbit. Not supposed to be that way. Already, of course, Trevor Etienne leaves and goes to Georgia, says, rather be there. Now, yesterday, new name in the transfer portal, name that's familiar down in Gainesville, Jaden Rashada, into the transfer portal from Arizona State. Now, Rashada, remember, only played 3 games last year at Arizona State, but he got the starting job and looked pretty good. I remember part of what was so crazy about the whole Rashada thing with UF was the idea that it wasn't just that they had proposed this insane $13 million package. It was that they'd done it for a guy who wasn't even a 5-star, who was not considered can't-miss superstar. Like, Lagway is the kind of player, theoretically, if you were going to make that kind of over-the-top offer, he's the kind of guy you were supposed to make for, not Rashada. Rashada's a good player, but was not perceived at that level of guy. Well, now Rashada's in the portal, and immediately everybody who covers recruiting says, Georgia, look out for the dogs. Chuck, can you imagine if Jaden Rashada goes in there, becomes the number 2 quarterback, and next year Gator fans are looking at losing to a guy that 2 years ago was supposed to be their guy for the future, and they're losing to Jaden Rashada if he beats out Gunnar Stockton for that job? Can you imagine how that's going to go over?
The worst thing I can say here is, see, I'm supposed to tell you Florida fans they don't have a skill set. They won't know how to deal with that. They've kind of developed one. You know, do you know why Harvey Updike murdered the trees? Ultimately, do you know what the reason was? Because he didn't have the skill set to deal with Auburn. He didn't have the life skill set to mentally, emotionally function with Auburn being a national champion. Florida, I'm supposed to say, Florida fans, how will they handle that? They've developed it.
The whole thing is just bizarre, again, that you look at it for Georgia. I got to wonder, Chuck, at this point, have they just concluded Gunnar Stockton's not the guy? Because to be that aggressive to bring in a guy who, you know, if you bring him in and he doesn't get the job next year, he's on the move again. I wonder about that.
Well, and this is another thing about Georgia. This is not necessarily an outlandish, you know, rumor, report, thought, because quarterback, there's like three spots Georgia will spend money on, and they'll spend money on QB. That absolutely is one of them.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
So, Robert, I want to thank you for your time. I just don't think you're the right person for this position.
I don't understand. Was it something I said?
Well, we did a background check on you and found some things of concern.
If you're in charge of hiring for your company, you know how helpful a background screening can be. That's why companies that use Horizon Background Screening make smarter hiring decisions. Don't let the wrong hire put your company at risk. Get the real story on your candidates at horizonscreening.com. Horizonscreening.com.